And on the line now I have Maria Corbett, who is Deputy Director with the CCLRP, which is the Child Care Law Reporting Project. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, John.
And thank you very much for taking the call. Now, we're going to talk about a new report. I think it's an extra report about the impact of COVID-19 on childcare cases. But will you just remind the listeners what CCLRP is all about?
Sure, yeah. So the Child Care Law Reporting Project, it was set up nearly 8 years ago. And the work that we do is that we have a team of reporters and we go to the district court around the country. So there's around 24 districts, so there's quite a lot of courts, over 80 courts around the country. So we go around the country to the courts and we sit in cases that concern child protection. The public isn't allowed to attend those cases to respect the privacy of the children and their families. So we've special permission to go in, as do the media. And then we gather up the reports and we publish them twice a year. So the reason for our existence and then the purpose of it is to bring transparency to those courts and to inform the government, the Department of Children, who are our funders, and other state agencies as to what is happening in the courts. And we really want to generate public debate. So it's great to be on the station today on the RFM to be able to bring some insight into what's happening.
And are these reports read by childcare professionals and such like?
Yes, I mean, we send them to the Department of Children and Youth Affairs, to the Child and Family Agency, TUSLA. We know then we put them up on our website, which is www.childlawproject.ie. So they're publicly available. And we know from feedback that they're used by universities in when they're training social workers and other professionals, solicitors, and training in the area of family law. So we know from feedback that they are used widely and read widely, and we would also get good feedback from the legal professionals that they find them very valuable. Because one thing, before our project started, before we started publishing this, judges only sit in their own districts, their own areas, so they don't know what is happening in other courts around the country. So really, this is the first chance that the legal profession and the judges and the social workers are getting a chance to see what practice is like around the country. And one of the things that we're hopeful that the new government will do is they'll publish a piece of legislation to establish a family court. So we'll actually, instead of having 24 separate courts around the country, that we would have a single national family court that would be specialised in child and family law, and that there would be more of a streamlined process. So we definitely know our reports are read and taken on board, which is a fantastic
Yeah, I've been talking now to CCLRP now for a few years now, and some of the reports that you read, they don't make for great reading. Now, the problems that you deal with, it's not just children, it's also parents have problems as well.
Yeah. I mean, they do. They make for difficult reading, and we're very careful also to try and anonymise the material. Yeah. So we don't want, obviously, if you read one of the reports and you were that person, you would recognise yourself. But the intention of how we write them is that nobody else will recognise them. And unfortunately, the themes that reemerge that affect children are obviously children living in unsafe family homes where there's abuse, neglect, the child's own mental health issues. And then with the parents, we have recurring themes of addiction, homelessness, cognitive disability, and mental health issues, psychiatric issues for the parents. We also have issues related to the fact that children are coming in as migrants into the country. They may be coming in as asylum seekers, and also with families from ethnic minorities. You'll have unique issues arising there with some of those families. So there's some of the reports do make difficult reading, and I suppose for us also there's a sense whereby we're seeing the same pattern emerging of very fragile families and children struggling to have a happy and a decent childhood in those families. And that's why the state needs to support the families, support the children.
Yeah, and it's nice to know that the CCLRP are there to bring this the knowledge to professionals. I also interview Childline and Children's Rights Alliance and Women's Aid and things like that. And it's heartbreaking to think that children are ringing up sometimes in the middle of the night to talk to a stranger.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we've been particularly worried about, and I think it's been fantastic during this COVID lockdown that we've just experienced. I mean, the fact that there was additional money for Childline and that was available was hugely important. But one of the things that we'd be really anxious to give a message to the government is that they need to prioritise children during this reopening phase. Yeah. And as we kind of prepare ourselves for potential further lockdowns or further localised lockdowns that may come as we deal with COVID-19. And one of the most important things is they need to open up the schools. So schools, early year services and disability services are extremely important for vulnerable children. Some other jurisdictions, they didn't close those doors to vulnerable children during the pandemic. They actually kept them open for vulnerable children. So Obviously we're in school holidays now. We're hoping that the schools and other services will open up from late August, September. But certainly from a child protection perspective, the teachers are really an important link in the child protection system. So children, teachers, special needs assistants, the SNAs, they see the children every day, they get to know them, they can watch the signs, they can see if there's a change in the child's presentation. They report then to TUSLIT, the Child and Family Agency, and often children where there's a difficulty at home will be picked up by the teachers, by the early years carers. So we really need that to be back operating from September to ensure that our system can function as it's designed to. Also, school is so important for children where they're living at home, they're living in an unhappy house where the adults are very stressed, that they would have access to friends, to an outlet, another safe space, and another space to go to. And I think that was one of the things that you can see from our reports. We had one report of a young child with a mother where the child had been in care for 2 years. Is one of the reports that we released on Monday. The child had been in care with foster carers for 2 years. The plan was that she would be reunified with her mother. So she went back home to the mother. Things were going well. But with the lockdown and with the extra unexpected pressure on the mother relapsed into her alcohol addiction. And that case is quite typical where the mother had the support of the foster parents. The child had the support and the mother had the support of the foster parents and also another relative that the child was close to. So there was a network of support there for the child. And obviously the child is primary school age, so would have been attending school. But under the unusual and unprecedented stress of the pandemic, the mother just felt very isolated and difficult to cope. And unfortunately, in that case, then the child went back into care. Now, there is a hope that with the right supports, that the mother will be able to resume care, get her addiction under control. But that would be quite a typical case of people who can manage at some level, but if there's a stress and they can't get the adequate support, they can find it very difficult. Do you know?
Yeah. And the COVID-19 pandemic, how has that affected courts and court cases? I'm not sure if the courts are still open or...
They are. The courts are open. They've been open throughout. In the very initial stages of the lockdown, the courts continued to hear cases, but they only heard emergency cases or renewals. And then what they did then is they began remote hearings. So I can talk to you and give you an example of one of those cases later. So they started hearing remote hearings. And then they also streamlined some of their own procedures, so things could be done if they weren't contested, if there was agreement, issues could be resolved by email, stuff like that to make it the cases easier. The courts now are doing social distance hearings, so they're restricting the number of people who can be physically in the courtroom. Courtrooms are generally often quite big. They vary, but some of them can be large enough spaces, so you can have a socially distant court hearing. The difficulty, though, is that often the general courthouse is a very busy building with lots of people queuing and waiting in the foyer. So they're trying to manage that. So there's less cases being heard. And what we can see is that despite the good work that the courts have done, there is a big backlog. So in these child protection cases, you often have an initial, maybe an emergency hearing or an initial hearing and a renewal of that. But then you have a larger full hearing, a full child care hearing. And a lot of those have been pushed off. In earlier work that we did, we looked at the delays around the country. So in some cases, you might have to wait as long as a year for one of those full hearing to get the dates. So if you've lost your dates, you have to continue. That gets pushed out even longer. So that's a real concern for us and something that we feel needs priority from the government to support the courts, to get the additional supports in for case management and to get those to tackle that backlog. The Child and Family Agency, TUSLA, also had to respond to the COVID crisis. So the social workers were designated essential workers. They've made provision that if a child was due to leave care during the crisis, that their supports would be extended. So you really don't want a very vulnerable child leaving care and having to come out into the middle of the lockdown. So they extended the care, and I think that was a really important move that they made. There was a concern that happened in other countries, such as Italy, that there would be a large number of children seeking a care placement. That didn't happen in Ireland, which is, fingers crossed, we won't experience that. There was no clusters of an outbreak within residential care for children, residential care settings. So, again, we were very lucky. But the Department of Children did do a lot of work to be ready for that, to get legislation ready, to be ready in relation to meeting a demand if it arose. So I suppose at the moment, when we're kind of looking into the future, I suppose the concern for us is the backlog of how the courts are going to manage. Already, they would have very long lists. You could have 100 cases in one day. Those cases would be child protection and also private family law, so separation, access, maintenance cases. Those long lists and then the getting the date for a hearing, those backlogs would be a concern for us. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the ways to fix that is for the government to establish a new national family court system, and that system then would be able to manage the caseload and the work, and it would separate out the hearing of cases from the general list that the courts deal with. So the same judge would be dealing with driving license issues or civil matters and also some bail hearings, and that they'd be dealing with a general list of issues. So a family court would separate that work out so that the new family court would only deal with the private family law and the child protection cases.
Okay, Maria, you mentioned down there a year waiting. I'd imagine it's very important for these cases, most of these cases, to be heard as soon as possible rather than...
Yeah, I mean, generally that would be that the child would be already in care. You know, so you wouldn't have a child at home where the parents, where there was a concern for the safety of the child. So it's more that the child might be already in foster care on an interim basis, but you would be waiting for a full care order hearing, and then you would move from a temporary care order to a permanent, a full care order that would generally last up to the age of 18 for the child. But from the child's perspective, if they're anxious about that, it is a long time to wait when they're unsure as to whether they're going home or that they're staying in care. And for parents who are looking to get their child back, the longer the child is in care, the more settled the child is. You know, you start to weaken the link with the birth family. It is those delays are very difficult from everybody's perspective.
Yeah. I see here one of the selected case studies and was an interim care order for a teenager who refused to return home due to alleged abuse. Now, I'd imagine that's a case that has to be sorted out there and then.
Yeah. So that child, a young girl, she was from an ethnic minority background. there was essentially allegations from her of physical and emotional abuse by her family, and she wished to remain in care. There was other children at home, but they felt that those children were safe to remain at home, but that there was a difficulty with her, and that difficulty had caused her mental health issues and suicidal ideation. So the social workers were supportive of her remaining in care. So in that case, it was, again, it was an interim, so temporary care order, and it was extended for 4 months. So 4 months' time, the court would come back to have a look at that. And those interim care orders, the law sets down that they have to be heard generally within a month or a couple of months' time, so that they will come back. So that's why the workload of the court, it is continually seeing the same cases when it's managing the cases. So that's why it's a very busy court and needs the resources to continue to hear it. There was another one there where there was only an 11-day order made because the parents hadn't been notified, so it had to come back within 11 days. So you can see the busyness of the courts and the importance of having a functioning court. You know.
And you're hoping that our new government now will introduce this.
Yeah, I mean, with the new government, we have a new configuration of the Department of Children. So the new Department of Children has an extended remit, so it includes disability and ethnic minorities. So from our perspective, there's a great opportunity there because a lot of the cases coming through the courts, there is an issue in relation to disability or ethnic minority. So we're pleased about that and the potential for something there. But really the piece of work that needs to happen is the Department of Justice has a bill in preparation, a family court bill. So that's important. There's a couple of other things that need to happen. Often when you have a child in care, they're accessing therapeutic support. So it could be counselling, it could be physiotherapy or occupational therapy, all the other therapies that the child could be receiving. And there may be an assessment needed. So to assess the child and assess the parents. And those assessments are brought into the court and they inform the judge's decision. So at the moment, due to the COVID, all of those therapies and assessments have been delayed. They will delay the judge being able to hold the case and make a final determination. So there's a need to resume all of those physical and psychological therapies and ensure that the assessments can take place as quickly as possible, because really children's lives move very quick. So any delay for the child, it can have a huge impact both on their progress and their development. If a child has been, you know, with a therapist and then there's a break, they really need to get that back up and running as soon as possible. So that's sort of some of the work that the HSE needs to do. In terms of the Child and Family Agency, one of the issues that we highlighted in this report was the importance of access. So access is where a child who's in care could have a visit or a phone call or some sort of, and sometimes an overnight access with their birth family. Well, often their siblings, maybe extended family members. So obviously with the COVID pandemic, they had to disrupt access, and in many cases it couldn't take place. So that is a very emotional issue for children and parents. It's often very mixed views. You can often have disputes about that get brought in courts, and the court would court order how access should take place. So there's a real need to be creative around that. But obviously during the lockdown, we started using the online Skype and various other methods for children to communicate with their parents and other family members. But that's not so easy. The nature of that engagement is not the same as face-to-face. So there's an issue there around how we do that and how we do it safely to ensure that everybody, the children and the foster family, that there is safety there. Often that there could be issues there in terms of a parent and wanting to keep of the foster home from the parents in some cases. So that's something that we feel is very important in terms of the Child and Family Agency, TUSA, needing to do further work in relation to how we can safely do access during this COVID era that we're in.
Yeah, and I know mental health therapy isn't great in this country, and I'd imagine that COVID-19 really had a very bad effect on the whole situation.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you know, those services, there's often a delay to get access to a psychologist, particularly it can be quite niche as to what is needed, and you have a child in a rural area and you need a particular type of, maybe a play therapist or somebody to work with them around a sexual abuse. So to find that therapist can be difficult, and to find somebody who can do a psychological assessment, there's often delays on that. The supply of those professionals can be in huge demand. So the fact that some of these relationships and assessments have been disrupted, I think, is really quite worrying for us at a time when people's mental health and their parents and their foster carers are all under more pressure than normal, given the strain that everybody has been under.
Okay, we're nearly running out of time, Maria, but there is one more thing I'd like to mention. A lot of people, when they hear about a child being taken away from a parent or parents or carers, they say, oh my God, that's so cruel and so sad. But it's necessary, and I'd imagine it's a last resort, and it's quite necessary. Like I'm reading here, one of the cases was district court makes order to detain self-harming child. Like detain, that's it.
Yeah, and maybe just to clarify that was actually the child has been detained in a psychiatric unit.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The use of the word detain would only be going if you're going into a hospital setting. So otherwise you're placed in care is the language that's used, or admitted to care maybe, but placed in care is usually used. Yeah, I mean, I think part of the work that the Department of Children is engaged in, and Child Family Agency, is to try and ensure that we know the children across the country who need support. The objective is generally to try and support the child and the family at home. And you would have the option to do a supervision order whereby supervisors can come into the home and check on the child, but the child remains at home. And often there would be support needed there. Maybe it might be around addiction or mental health or other issues. Then you would move to a situation, if that isn't sufficient, where the child might come into care, perhaps on a temporary order, and just try and see, can the parents turn around whatever difficulties they're facing. Often it can be housing as well. You'll have parents who are homeless with an addiction, so they've got multiple challenges in their life. Can they turn them around and have the child return to them? And if not, then the court will go to a final hearing where they'll look to see to make a final court order to keep the child in care in a longer term, generally up to the age of 18. So there is steps in the process. And the judges effectively, they take the evidence from the social workers, take their recommendation, take expert evidence before they make a determination. And the child's views and wishes are heard generally. That's another issue for another day's conversation maybe, but the child's views will be taken into consideration.
Yeah.
But the use of the detention in that case was actually a child who needed to be placed in a psychiatric unit. It was a child who was a danger to themselves. They were self-harming, and that was the solution needed. But the law there there's a quite a high threshold. You have to have a mental illness, otherwise you can't be detained. So the child was being moved out then into a different care setting.
Yeah.
Once well enough to.
Okay. Just one more thing, and this is a situation that came across. I think it was Women's Aid, and you mentioned homelessness there. A situation where there's domestic abuse and a woman has to leave the home with her children, and the abuser is left in the family home. Is that still the case, Maria?
When I was talking about the issues that face parents, I should have mentioned domestic violence. It's a recurring theme in a lot of these cases. There will be domestic violence allegations. And often what can happen in those cases is that while the abuse may be by a father towards the mother, the experience for the child, the experience of witnessing domestic violence and living in that house, coupled with other issues, could result in the child coming into care. And there would be an issue there of, is the mother not able to protect the child from the abuse? That can be sometimes the narrative. But yes, children do come into care where there's incident, you know, where domestic violence is a feature of the family. In Ireland, our law is still the child is taken into care. But in other jurisdictions, for example, in Germany, they will have a law whereby the perpetrator of the violence will be an order made whereby the perpetrator of the violence will have to leave the family home.
Yeah, well,
and the child will remain. So from a child's perspective, not from the parent, the mother's perspective, but from the child's perspective, the court can make an order to say that the issue in the family is domestic violence. The perpetrator of that violence must leave the home, and the child will be supported to stay with the other parent and perhaps other siblings in the family home. And I think that's something that we should explore here as to how that could we bring that into Irish law? Would it fit within our law? Could we do that? Because I think there often is issues with domestic violence, and we need to try and unpack them to see, can we make that home safe for the child and the victim parent?
Okay, Maria, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'd imagine we could go on talking for another half hour. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go?
For us, I mean, I think you women has an opportunity now when we kind of plan to ourselves for any further ways that we would prioritize children, in particular vulnerable children, that we would ensure that the schools are open and that the courts are given the supports they need to manage the cases that they have to hear. They have to keep hearing these cases. They need the supports to be able to do that, and we need the social workers and the teachers to be given what they need to continue to engage with the children and their families.
Okay, and if people want more information or wants to start a debate, the website is childcareproject.ie, is that correct?
Childlawproject.ie.
Child Law Project. Okay, Maria, listen, thank you very much for taking the call this morning, and I'm sure we'll be talking again. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you. Okay, that was Maria Corbett, our Deputy Director with the CCLRP.